conflicts and aspirations, as well as the essential truths at the play's heart. The just are bedeviled by the selfish, the fortunate by the resentful, the powerless by the powerful, and chance plays a far greater role into our day-to-day than we wish. At this moment of serious inquiry into social inequities, Bertha, the sewing machine girl, speaks more clearly and truthfully than it has for years. The Obie Award-winning Metropolitan Playhouse has been finding America one play at a time since 1993. Please tune in Saturday at 7 p.m. on 99.5 WBAI or streaming at WBAI.org.
The previous program was Neurodiversity Experts Talk with Natalie Tenuway, heard Fridays at 2 p.m. It is now 2:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Ecologic coming up.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we gonna plant our seeds, it makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry for Mother Earth. Makes me wanna cry for
clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gillert.
I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for April 30th, 2021.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
The long fight to shut down Indian Point nuclear reactors is finally over. We can now breathe a sigh of relief that no additional nuclear waste will be produced near New York City.
Today, we are happy to have as our guest one of the champions of the Stop Indian Point movement, Marilyn Ellie. Marilyn, tell us about yourself. Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition.
Well, that's true, and I did have a life before then and still do. I was an elementary teacher, librarian, and I saw these little kids coming through my door and said, oh, my God, what are we handing over to them? That's how I got involved in Indian Point over a quarter of a century ago, actually.
Oh, my.
And I've been working on it ever since. It's gone through a lot of changes over this past quarter of a century. And
yeah.
I was thinking it might be good to acknowledge some of those early people who really paved the ground for all of us, on whose shoulders we stand.
So how are you feeling today?
I'm
25 years later.
A triumphant in a way. We're being very careful not to celebrate because the closing really does cause a lot of grief for the people of Buchanan. They've depended on that financially for their whole town, their school, their fire department, everything, the police department, and now a lot of that's going away. And they're getting money. I mean, they're getting money from the state. Make no two ways about that. However, they won't be made whole. A lot of people have moved, taken jobs elsewhere with Entergy. And the company is keeping, Holtec, the new company, is keeping about 300 people on to do the decommissioning work, which is very different from what they're used to, but they are honoring that contract. So it's a big change. And, you know, we don't want to make light of that.
How many people did it used to employ when it was active?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
How many people used to be employed at Indian Point when it was active?
Well, at the peak, there was under 1,000, then it went down to 800, and then there was a lot of labor problems and kept on going down because Entergy kept, quote, consolidating and looking for cheaper ways to operate. But Buchanan, the point I want to make is that Buchanan has 2,000 people. And that's their whole village. And there are 20 million people that live within 50 miles of that plant. So this is a proper and prudent decision to close it down. We're all safer and better for it. And we will have cleaner air and cleaner water because there won't be any more emissions.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been working on energy issues for 40 years, since I was just a kid, really. And I noticed that right after there's a big accident, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, Fukushima, there was a lot of people who wanted to become active in closing plants down. And with Three Mile Island in 1979, most of the activity was in shutting down the Trigger reactor at Columbia University, which we did, and the Shoreham nuclear power plant on the north shore of Long Island, which we did. And so then we would put our attention to shutting down the uranium mining that they wanted to do at the Catskills, which we succeeded in doing. And, you know, somebody in the early 20s, I'm thinking, wow, you just win. You have the facts on your side. You have the emotion on your side. You just win. And then I joined a coalition in Westchester County to stop Indian Point. And it took a while. We won, but it took a while.
Well, let's be clear. What won here is the economics. I was involved in a lot of the early environmental movements too. And then when I say 26 years ago for Indian Point, that's when I said, you know, I can't have a broad area of interest and focus on this nuclear power stuff because it's complicated. So focusing just on that has really given me a lot of insights into how the industry works. And I want to be really clear that what motivates the industry is money. They weren't making enough money at Indian Point, and that we were aggregating them. I mean, that definitely played an effect, but it was
point
the profit
for activists.
Motive. Sorry?
That's a point for activists.
I can't hear you.
It was a point for activists that we did. That we kept them from doing business as usual quite the way they were used to doing.
And it's
hard to say exactly, you know, when I wrote Chernobyl on the Hudson, when Chernobyl happened in 1986, I focused attention on the New York Power Authority, which at the time owned Indian Point 3, because everybody had focused on Con Ed. And I don't know if Chernobyl on the Hudson had anything to do with New York Power Authority getting out of the nuclear business, but it might have. Because they got rid of the plant and they never bought any power from them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Some things will remain unknown, but I do. You can look at where Entergy has its home roots in the South, and they just routinely submit all kinds of different applications, and they routinely get passed without anybody blinking an eye. And that did not happen here.
Yeah.
And the reason it did not happen is because there were a lot of us that were organized and told people, look at this. You got to speak up.
Yeah.
Marilyn, there are a few questions that have been coming in over the promotion that we've been doing. And one of them is, what makes this time different from all of the times that they said that the plants were closing? And I think the answer is easy for some of us, and others are so cynical that they can't understand what makes this time different.
Donna, you are so muffled. I can't. I'm sorry. Say the last part of that again. Look, I didn't say.
How about now? I just changed the mic. Is this better?
A little.
Okay, so a question that came in is, what makes this time different? Other times we thought it was over, and now it really is.
What makes it different this time?
Yeah. Is it the cynical members of our listenership are wondering, is this real?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely real. It's going to stop generating electricity, and the license will change, and it will go over from Entergy to Holtec. And the plant, you really need to think about three phases. There's the closing, which we are just embarked on. There is the decommissioning, which is really heavy, dirty, dangerous deconstruction work. And then there's the site restoration. So Indian Point is now embarked on all of that with a company that does not have a good record, actually, and will require a lot of oversight. The name of the company is Holtec. They've had a lot of legal problems. But that didn't keep them from the NRC from approving them for the license transfer. So I don't know. The other thing that's different about Indian Point closing is that the state will be involved. There's a joint proposal, and we have a strong closing agreement. Is it as strong as it should be? No. Did we get everything we wanted? No. But the Public Service Commission will be involved. There will be some kind of decommissioning oversight board. We don't know how that's going to, the shape of that yet. But the state agencies will be having a monthly meeting, actually, with Holtec on progress and to see where the money's going and to look askance at any of the exemptions that the company might ask and could get approved easily through the NRC. Also, they get money for storing that fuel. And according to this joint proposal, what they'll get is only 50% of it. The other 50% will go back into the decommissioning fund. Is that the answer to the question you were looking for?
Yeah, Holtec, I'm here in New Jersey, and Holtec has deep connections to our political machine. And, they're a bad actor. Will the oversight board information be accessible to the public, or will they stay kind of closed, you know?
Well, the decommissioning oversight board was a piece of legislation that many of us worked on for 3 years. It was a very elegant piece of legislation. It had good representation from stakeholders. No point to go over that now, because once it got into the legislative process, it really got, let me just say it got changed. And then it went from there to the governor. It didn't get passed as a piece of legislation. What happened was that the governor sent it to the Public Service Commission as a memo and said, here, please do this. So right now, Tom Cogdon, who's head of the Indian Point Joint Task Force, which will sunset when the plant closes, actually, is involved in working on the Decommissioning Oversight Board. I've not been able to get a copy of what they're working from or working towards. So it's a mystery right now.
Well, we'll hope for the best.
Well, one of the things, one of the victories of the nuclear industry is to label themselves legally as clean. And they've actually had environmentalists say how they're good for the planet. And in a few minutes, can you give us a couple of premise about why that isn't true?
I can do it in two words, actually. a lot of it, first of all, I would refer to Amory Lovins, who has all the charts, graphs, and stats that you'd ever want to know. But basically,
amazing man.
It's a failed business model. And the two words are time and money. You can't, there's not enough time to build enough nuclear plants, even if you wanted to. and there's not enough money to do their, where's the money coming from, because they're so expensive. But the money part really has to do with price per kilowatt, you can say kilowatt hour or per megawatt, however you want to go, of electricity. There is no point in saying, oh, well, we're going to do all of the above. No, we don't have time for that. What we need is the cheapest, quickest, most renewable, greenest way to produce electricity, and that is not nuclear. Nuclear fails on both accounts, time and money. So it is a false solution to greenhouse gases. And also, you'll notice the people that talk about, oh, it's clean, there's no carbon, never mention the nuclear waste problem. And, you know, it takes a bit of carbon to...
a bit? Yeah, you got to keep that waste cool forever. And I think people have trouble with the concept of forever. So... people who go, well, I don't want to think about the nuclear waste problem. I don't want to talk about it. I want to figure out how much energy it takes to keep it cool. Because forever, how do you deal with that? How do you quantify forever?
That's right.
And there are still there are still people who cling to the industry lies about nuclear being clean, even while acknowledging the dirty waste. So it's like, you have to give the facts of why nuclear is definitely not clean. From the beginning of mining the uranium in the Southwest in indigenous Native American territories, to keeping the fuel waste cool, that takes a lot of methane.
And if you don't keep it cool, you'll have an explosion like the Soviet Union had when they didn't keep their nuclear waste cool. It may have been the worst nuclear accident in the world, in history, because several towns got wiped off the map. But everything was so secret. We don't know if it was worse than what happened at Church Rock, New Mexico, or Fukushima.
That's true.
And the 35th anniversary of that was just on Monday.
Oh! Mm-hmm. Whoa! Yeah. All right, Sally. It's the other aspect is that the time it takes to build a nuclear plant means you have to continue burning methane. And why would anybody who doesn't want methane burned say, oh, well, let's keep burning it while we're making some other way of poisoning us? So that's another aspect of this I don't understand. And do we want to talk about the commemorations that are going on Zoom this evening? I put it on the Eco Radio website. But let's talk about what's going on tonight, because, you know, Ecologic is not the only place there's a celebration going to happen.
That's true. Catherine Scopic and Shutdown Indian Point people are having a Zoom at 7. It's not a Zoom, actually. It's a webinar. She thinks it's a little more secure, and she has had some calls from pro-nuclear people, so she's a little concerned about security. But you can certainly Google it easy enough with a Shutdown Indian Point now, and you can get you can get an invitation to join, and she will send you the link. But she's got a lot of people on. Oh, my goodness. We all have about 4.5 minutes. I'm exaggerating. But a lot of people have been working on this issue over the years, and a lot of people need to be acknowledged. And I think that's sort of what's going to happen tonight. And we can all acknowledge all of our hard work and the success of it, really.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, the information that we acquired and disseminated successfully. A lot of organizations don't have that amount of information that they get out there, and mm-hmm. people learn about it. And that's important. The fact that the reactor vessels are literally falling apart, right? The bolts that hold it together are missing. Right. We found out about it, and we got the information out there, terrified a few people, blew a few people's minds, but the information got out there.
Yes, it did. And so I think we're seeing the results of some of that. I would like to say one more quick thing about people who say keep nuclear plants open until you can replace them. That's not the way the system works. It's not a sequential kind of thing. you can plan ahead and have your renewables coming online, like New York is. We've got 20 different renewable projects that will be online within the next year and a half. So there is not a concern should, and I'm not convinced it will, should the greenhouse gases go up a little bit. I mean, we haven't used the electricity from Indian Point in this area for a long time. So I'm not expecting any increase. But everything is down from 2016 anyway. And a temporary, in my opinion, should there be a temporary spike, it's just that, temporary. And we will be on the road to a cleaner and greener energy grid in New York because of all the renewables we have coming online. In a way, when you have nuclear power plants online, they take the place. They take up a lot of space, and it slows down renewables. So closing them makes a lot more space, a lot more interest in renewables coming online, more money to be made.
Well, there's the solar energy real industry with its birth from the anti-nuclear power industry. I was there. I got to see it in the early 80s, and it was amazing. That solutions orientation that the anti-nuclear movement had, which created more energy efficiency and more solar installations. So there, we made that connection 40 years ago, and that connection is still there.
Yes, and things have changed a lot, but it's the idea of, yes, we can do this, yes, we're going to be green, yes, we're going to be carbon-free, that makes all the difference.
Yep,
so we are definitely need to keep going. This is not the end of the story. It's just the closing. This is major closing. But to ensure that decommissioning will be as safe and transparent as possible, Clearwater and other organizations are calling on the Public Service Commission to promptly convene the Decommissioning Oversight Board, and that is mandated by executive action. We're hoping that the board is going to be reflect the intent of the legislation that was proposed and not passed during the last legislative session. We have one more minute to talk about that. Can you the truth is, my gosh, the time flies when you're having fun. And unfortunately, we are out of time. We're going to continue this in the Zoom afterwards, but that will take a while before that gets on Ecologic webpage. So tune in for our next episode next week on the Champlain-Hudson Power Express. That is a perfect follow-up to today's program.
Right.
You can rely on Ecologic to bring you news of upcoming events and people who are making a difference. This is a most important role for Ecologic and WBAI-FM.
To listen to this show again and any of our past shows, and to get environmental news on a variety of topics, go to www.ecoradio.org.
That's www.ecoradio.org.
Also, to find out when our shows are posted, those of you online, go to www.ecoradio.org and please sign up for our mailing list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our Facebook page. Enter Eco-Logic.
There are many video and audio versions of Ecologic available to you for a donation to WBAI.
Go to www.give2wbai.org and choose Ecologic on the drop-down menu. After you click on Next and call 212-209-2950 and say you want to become a member or a BAI buddy.
And of course, we would love you to become a member in the name of your favorite radio program, Ecologic.
It's a win-win.
And a big thanks again to our terrific engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. See you next Friday with a show on the Champlain-Hudson Power Express, May 7th at 2:30 p.m. Thank you, Marilyn Ellie, for joining us today.
And you're welcome.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun.
For WBAI. WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. The wave of coronavirus infections that began earlier this year is easing in most of the country, as 42 states and the district are reporting lower caseloads over the past 2 weeks. Hospitals in Michigan and upper Midwest states that were flooded with patients in mid-April are discharging now more than they're admitting. The daily average of new infections nationally has dropped to the lowest level since mid-October. Bill de Blasio, mayor of New York City, said he plans to have the city fully open by July 1st. The State Department is urging citizens from the United States to leave India as soon as it is safe to do and avoid traveling to the country as case rates skyrocket and hospitals become overwhelmed. India reported more than 379,000 new coronavirus cases over the last 24 hours, breaking the world's record for most new daily cases for the second straight day. The Minneapolis Star Tribune is reporting that the Justice Department is moving forward with plans to charge Derek Chauvin and three other former Minneapolis police officers with federal civil rights violations in the killing of George Floyd. The Star Tribune also reported prosecutors intend to charge Chauvin in connection with the violent arrest of a child in 2017. In that case, Chauvin and a partner officer were in the process of attempting to arrest a 14-year-old boy. Chauvin hit the teen with a flashlight before applying a neck restraint with his knee until the 14-year-old lost consciousness, according to court documents filed by state prosecutors. According to those documents, quote, the child began repeatedly telling the officer that he could not breathe, and his mother told Chauvin to take his knee off her son. Pasquotank County, North Carolina Sheriff Tommy Wooten said that he has put four deputies involved in the fatal police shooting of Andrew Brown Jr. last week back on active duty after a review of body cam video showed they did not fire their weapons. Three others who did will remain on leave. In the night of peaceful protest, police officers dressed in riot gear confronted protesters who disregarded the city's 8 p.m. curfew, and at least two arrests were made. Among the chants heard in the streets Thursday evening, "You can't hide. You committed homicide." A North Carolina judge on Wednesday delayed for at least 30 days the public release of police body cam videos of the killing, siding with arguments their immediate disclosure could jeopardize active investigations. The Justice Department is looking into ways to tighten federal criminal law to make it easier to prosecute alleged domestic terrorists, a top Justice Department official told Congress on Thursday. Brad Wagman, deputy chief of the Justice Department's National Security Division, made the announcement at a hearing before House Committee on Appropriations. In a separate House Homeland Security Subcommittee hearing, John Godfrey, a senior State Department counterterrorism official, testified that U.S. diplomatic posts had reported rising concerns about links between racially and ethnically motivated violent extremism in the United States and in Europe. He added that groups had encouraged individuals to join the military or law enforcement agencies to gain training that could be used to target perceived enemies. Currently in Washington, it's partly sunny and 72 degrees. In New York, it's cloudy and 66. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
This Saturday, a special May Day episode of Working Class Heroes.